Thank you for joining us on this episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stinnett, where we examine current and emerging technologies through the lens of diversity and equality. All right.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stinnett. Today, we are going to have a What's New in Technology, and we're going to talk about more AI stuff. So I think this will be a fun one, Rochelle.
I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to pick your brain and see what you know. As I said, it's not a typical Ask Drew, but it will kind of border on an Ask Drew.
Yeah. And this is like, there's so much stuff in AI. I was looking through our the topics pre-recording, and it's like, this is like, it's a lot of stuff. Like, it's hard to keep track of. I mean, I'm not like the most organized person in the world, but I do all right keeping track of new stuff. And it's a lot of things.
It really is. And, you know, people say I'm the prognosticator of doom, but, you know, it's not necessarily doom, but it really brings us to a place where we need to be aware of what's happening around us. And a lot of us are sleeping at the wheel, you know, and when we bang into AI, we're going to be surprised, but it's coming. And it's coming at a rate that I don't think a lot of us are really prepared for. Yeah. So, Drew, let's get started because I can't wait to hear what you think about this. So, Drew, first of all, what is AI? We use the acronyms, like everybody knows what AI is, but artificial intelligence. And it's been around for quite a while. But Drew, start us off. Tell us, what is AI in its most native form?
Yeah. So AI, like you said, just means artificial intelligence, which has been around for like decades now. Like, it's, we've had AI for a fair amount of time. It's just gotten really good over the last, I would say, like probably the last decade. It's really like increased by leaps and bounds. And really what it is instead of like traditional, I would call it like computer intelligence, which is, you know, ones and zeros and having a human go in and very specifically program something or a response to something. Like, I'll use the example, like 2 + 2 = if you put that into a computer 50 years ago, it knew what to do, even longer than, you know, 50 years ago. And that's not really, I don't consider that artificial intelligence. That's just being able to do computations, which is, you know, great. But then in the AI world, you know, you don't always have an exact 2 + 2, right? Numeral 2 + numeral 2. What if you have the word TWO plus the numeral 2? Like, should that be 4 or should that be a string of TWO2? Like, it's sort of open for interpretation as to what it means. And what AI has done is sort of simplified that. You know, it says, hey, you told me to calculate the word 2 + the number 2. I think I can figure out that you actually want the answer 4. It's not that you want to, you know, do something weird with these two things that are seemingly unrelated. And sort of in like the basis of the most basic of all terminology, that's sort of how I think about AI, is it goes in and says, hey, I know you asked me to do something. I'm going to like take what you told me and interpret it a little bit before giving you the answer you want, which seems very simple. But like, as we can see with modern generative AI, specifically like right now, like that is super powerful and like has a lot of, say, like maybe unknown side effects. But as far as jobs go, like now, you know, AI can do a pretty good job at assuming what a human is going to write with all this stuff. And it makes it like a very big game changer in technology, when now you can have an AI doing quite a bit of your work versus just having an old school calculator that does exactly what you tell it to do.
Exactly. And I think that one of the things that we, if you go back, you know, again, I want to make this perfectly clear. I'm only 19 years old. But going back to the 70s, when I started working in computers, humans told computers what to do. We wrote code and we told it, we want you to, you know, retrieve this tape drive or put this data in this location on the drive. We told it what to do and it acted upon it.
Yeah.
Over time, even with early artificial intelligence, it was thinking slowly. It was not really, making its own decisions, but it was thinking slowly. So let's just say the human told it to put this data in this location, and there was already something in that location that was, let's say, locked. In other words, the data there could not be moved, or the data there was a piece of data that was necessary for it to do another act. The artificial intelligence would not necessarily put the data where the human told it to put it because it knew that that was something there that could not be moved or changed. So it then would give an error, cause the program to abort or something like that. So as we look at what AI was early able to do, we were in a lot of ways in awe that it was able to tell us, you humans made a mistake. So, but as we looked at what that AI was, we developed these terms, and so the terms were narrow or weak, and I think in a lot of ways those terms were appropriate. Wouldn't you say, Drew?
Oh
Right?
yeah, for sure.
Because it was weak, if you will. It was not able to think for itself. Okay, you told me to put it here, but I could find another place a little farther along the string to put it. It required the human to tell it to move it a little further. So, Drew, tell us a little bit about narrow and weak AI. So, how long did it have a life, and what was it able to do that led us to this next level of AI, generative AI? Can you talk a little bit about that?
So narrow AI or weak AI, this wasn't something I had heard of before we started talking about this podcast. But from my reading, the interpretation I take from it is that narrow AI is what we had. The articles talk a lot about like your virtual assistant. So your Amazon Alexa, hopefully didn't say that too loud, or
Because it would go do something, right? It would
or the
order you
Mac.
something.
The Mac version, which is Siri again, like hopefully that's not setting off people's assistants. But those were like, when those things started coming out 5 or 10 years ago, they were like pretty impressive because you could do things like say, like, hey, what time is it? Or, what's the capital of Utah? Or, how big is Canada? You could give it these really simple queries and sort of phrase them however you wanted, and it would give you the information back, which at the time was great. And we probably sort of like take that for granted nowadays that, how cool that is if you can just like use human language to talk to a thing. The other thing it reminds me of is, did you ever watch the TV show Silicon Valley?
Yes.
So that was a TV show about a startup in California, and one of their interns, I thought this was something that always stuck with me from that show, is he was working on developing an app where you would point your camera at food and it would tell you what food it was. So when they're testing his app, they take a camera, they open up his app, and they point it at a hot dog, and the app says, "This is a hot dog." And it's like, "Oh, this is great. This can, detect food." And then they point it at a watermelon, and the app says, "This is not a hot dog." And
Right.
so it really just said, "It's are things a hot dog or not?" And I thought that was sort of like a neat representation of this narrow AI, which is doing like one very specific task. It's not saying what time it is. It's looking at an image and saying, "Hey, is this a hot dog or is it not a hot dog?" And what they ended up doing with that, like, on his face, that seems sort of like who really cares? Because humans can look at hot dogs all day and decide if they're a hot dog or not. So they sort of wrote that app off, and then the character of the intern ended up selling it to, I don't remember if it was Facebook or Snapchat, because hot dogs are so similar to penises, they can now use the application to say, like, oh, are people putting inappropriate stuff on here? Does this look like a hot dog or does it not look like a hot dog? So like a fairly like simple concept, which would be this narrow AI, is like now doing content moderation on fictional social networks, which I thought was a very like interesting use, right? Because that is like that's a valuable thing to have on these social networks is can you tell if this is sexually explicit image or not? All based off of an algorithm that can, determine if something is a hot dog or not a hot dog.
Right. And I think that in a lot of ways, when we talked about ChatGPT, a while ago on this podcast, and we talked about it several times. You know, people are excited about ChatGPT and what it can do, right?
Yeah.
But when you think about these technologies, we have powered these technologies the way it is. So the social media companies have been at Congress testifying about the harms it's done to children. But really, we as a society, and I don't remember which one of us said this, it might have been you or me or Dan, you know, whenever it's free, you are the product, right? We've given AI the tools to be what it is. What you just said, right? Knowing the difference between a hot dog and a male part of his body,
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
So through our use of social media and other free tools, AI has been able to learn and grow. So is it true or is it fair to say that narrow AI has been the launch pad for generative AI? So can we say, going back to the example I said earlier, so we have told AI, you know, like put this piece of data here on this disk drive, and it said, no, it can't go there. Using those kinds of things, has generative AI, including social media and other things, grown from the use of narrow AI?
I believe so, or at least they use a lot of the same fundamental building blocks. Like the biggest one I think of is the like machine learning, which is honestly like that's still very vague to me. Like what is machine learning? The anecdote that I think works that I've heard that best describes machine learning is like you ask a machine, hey, what's 2 plus 2? The machine says 2 plus 2 is 57, and then you tell the machine, no, 2 plus 2 is 4, and then the machine says, oh, okay, 2 plus 2 is 4. And if you do that enough times, the machine eventually like can really do a good job at figuring out what 2 plus 2 is. And that applies to both the narrow AI and the generative AI stuff that's coming out now. But they sort of, and this is not something I'd really thought of before reading the articles you sent over, but like I'd never really thought of what the difference between narrow and generative AI were. I mean, number one, because I didn't know narrow AI was a thing. But one of the articles I thought described it really well, and it talked about how narrow AI or sort of traditional AI is always looking into the past or describing things that already exist. And generative AI is creating something totally new. Right. That's where you can go in and say, hey, write me a new Seinfeld episode, but include, Vin Diesel as a character from Fast and the Furious and Seinfeld. And it'll look at the past, but it'll create something new, completely new for you based off of all the information it has. And that's, to me at least, that's where things really get sort of cool is now that AI is being creative and not just, consolidating existing facts for you, which, while that was very cool 10 years ago, not quite as cool now because we're all used to it.
Right. And the fact that narrow AI and generative AI coexist together. And in a lot of ways, generative AI needs, I won't say requires, but needs narrow AI in a lot of ways to do the heavy lifting, right? So, in other words, generative AI is doing the thinking forward. It's always thinking about how can I get to the next thing, where it's counting on generative AI to think about, you know, okay, we've already done that, right? So in other words, what you were just saying, so we've got Fast and the Furious, we've got 85 instances of Fast and the Furious, and generative AI only can not only but can pull content from that to look forward to creating Fast and the Furious 165 episodes, and we won't use all the stuff we used before because we already know that's there. So it's okay. So that's one way to look at the existence between the two. But I do like what you said about machine learning, right? So what is machine learning, right? Is machine, you could take it literally, right? A machine is learning. Well, that's been the case since the beginning of time. Machines are always learning, right? You could take the assembly line at Ford, right? Machines are constantly learning to get better, right? And it takes human ingenuity to make that happen. What's really concerning about this with generative AI in a lot of ways, so I think you mentioned to me Notion. Notion IO. So I have been playing with that for a while. It's amazing. So let's just say you type a sentence, I want to go to Disney World and I want to meet Goofy. It will then write an entire scenario of what it would be like going to Disney World and meeting Goofy. So think about all the concerns of that, right? So you're writing a book, and all of a sudden this technology is going to write it for you, and you want to be published, and your publisher is going to ask, how much of that did you write? You know, so in the academic domain, that's terrible, right? Because you know, you as the author hasn't done anything to create this content, and there's no way to verify that, right? So plagiarism, is this legitimate content? All of these things come into play. So I do think that machine learning might be not necessarily a thing that we need to count on our list of things we need to say, okay, well, this is one of these things we need to talk about. Machine learning is machine learning. Machines are always learning. So narrow AI, generative AI, and all these other things. Machine learning is just in the background always of all of these things. Machines are always learning. So we can minimize that turning. Machines are always learning and they will always continue to learn. So that's nothing new. So, but when you think about generative AI, Drew, and what is going on with that, how do you think what we know right now, generative AI will do to every aspect of our lives? So not just what we talked about, like replacing people, because that's a con you know, McKinsey and Gartner, they're all talking, they're writing about this concept. I even seen Brookings write about this, like it's going to replace all of us. Will it?
No, I don't think. I mean, as long as I've been a technologist, there's always been a something on the horizon that's going to replace all technologists. So I'm a little
But what about
pessimistic that it's going.
the bus driver? What about the trash guy? What about the person at the hotel desk who greets you? What about what does that mean for all of us? Not just the technologists, but what about all of us?
So especially I would say like writers right now are in trouble, not necessarily creative writers, but like people that are like, and I think this is happening even right now. Like if you were to look up a story on let's say like Durham history, if you were to Google Durham history right now, you may very well be seeing articles that were auto-generated by something like OpenAI or ChatGPT. Like, and I think that's only going to get, I'm going to call this like worse because it's not going to be real people writing it. It's not going to be journalists writing it. It's going to be summarizations of other articles, you know, glumped together in a way that makes it very easy for you to read. And I think that's happening right now and will continue to happen. So like, I would say journalism is in a scary place right now just because it's so, I won't say easy, but probably cost effective to generate these articles out of like nothing, right? Like right now, we could pull up a OpenAI prompt and say, hey, tell me what happened in Durham, North Carolina last week, and set it to a very like exciting, put it in an exciting setting. And it could do something like that and probably get a fair amount of clicks. So I think that's sort of a bad side of things. The flip side of that is a lot of non-journalist folks, but a lot of folks have to write things that they don't necessarily care about, but that they have to summarize. This came up at work the other day when we were talking about, so we've got a meeting that a bunch of people are in. We want to share what happened in that meeting, but nobody wants to go through and write up like super detailed minutes and have to, you know, remember who to send it to and proofread all of that. And somebody brought up, hey, you know, if we do this meeting and just pump it through OpenAI, like OpenAI can, or whatever other AI technology, it can do like a really good job at summarizing what we talked about and write that for us. So now we don't have somebody that's not great at writing, having to devote time to doing, you know, a meeting summary. You can do that all automatically. And I think that's great. And, you know, that doesn't kill any jobs. It's just killing, let's see, I would describe it as like it's freeing up people to do other things when they don't, nobody wants to be writing these meeting summaries anyway. So I think that's a good version of it. The bad version is like, what if you have a full-time person that's writing up meeting summaries all the time? And they're probably going to do a better job than the AI is, but that's not guaranteed. Like the AI may, in many cases, do better than a person actually doing these summaries. And I mean, while that's good for like the people reading the summary, it's not good for the employee who no longer has a job because a machine can now do it top to bottom.
I think that that's naive, Drew. I think that that generative AI or whatever that thing is, open AI, whatever you want to call it, is going to do a whole lot of jobs better than humans will do. Because once it knows, like, okay, so let's just say your meeting summary, you know, so if it can record what it heard, so in other words, you turn on some method to record your meeting or something like that, and AI is able to summarize, it gets the name of all the people that are there, it will create a crisper version. And I have done that. I've seen that happen, in Zoom. Zoom does captions, and what I've done with that is I've used that and it actually put it in Notion. It was amazing what it did. What I like that just I say you know a lot or clearly a lot. When I put it in Notions, it took out all of the repeat words that I say over and over again. But Drew, I think that and again, I like I said, people say I'm the pronostic, whatever that word is, I can't say of doom. I'm always promoting doom. But I really believe, like, when you think about how cities and states think about how to consolidate and reduce costs, like right now in Durham, Durham Public Schools did something to the pay of their classified workers, and they make a distinction between certified and classified. What a horrible thing. You know, it's amazing. Human resources languages. You know, I am on the warpath of human resources. They are absolutely awful people. You know, you classify and determine people by terms. You eliminate human beings. What horrible words. But anyway, Durham Public Schools is going through this thing between classified and certified. And so you are messing with people's pay and livelihoods. You know, there are some people who have become homeless because of this. But anyway, think about these things that they're struggling with. So, you know, they're probably not going to be able to get rid of teachers soon. But think about this. If you could turn a robot into the person that sweeps the floor at their school or empties the trash or does some of these things that are not required you to interact with students or other people, why wouldn't they do that? You know, so this is where I told you I have a little joke. Okay, so, and this is about AI. So many of you are not old enough to remember this television show, but there used to be a television show cartoon called The Jetsons. It was one of my favorite television shows. These people were somewhere in space. You know, they had a little house in space. Within that house, you know, it was George. I can't remember the wife's name. They had a son, I believe. I don't think they had a daughter. I don't remember all of it. So, you know, my brain's going quickly. But the Jetsons was a wonderful cartoon that came on television. I think it came on Saturday morning early. The Jetsons had a robot called Rosie. You remember any of this, Drew? Have you ever seen it?
Oh yeah, for sure.
What was Rosie, Drew?
Yeah, she was a robot cleaning ro cleaning robot.
She
So,
did
like,
everything. Yeah. So if you could imagine, and this is in the 70s, 80s, I believe. I don't exactly know when
I
this.
think it was 60s or 70s. I can.
So, but imagine that in the 60s or 70s, who was thinking that far ahead that a robot would be able to do all of those things in your house, clean, cook, everything in your house? A robot. In the 60s and 70s, and here we are in the 21st century talking about something that has not yet come to the forefront. We aren't rushing to the media to print it, but super or strong AI. And Drew, what is super AI?
So super AI, and again, this is something I've not heard of before, but this is something that I am very excited about is so like right now, Rosie, like something that and the thing that I like about the super AI is right now generative AI, and again, I'm gonna use like the Seinfeld script thing. If we tell generative AI to make like a random Seinfeld script about Fast and the Furious, it can do that great. Our human brains can comprehend it. That's awesome. But what about like stuff that the human brain can't comprehend, right? When we think about like the well, I mean, one great example is like a cleaning robot, right? Like this thing that we had never really thought of before that can now go and, you know, clean your house, where before you thought only like a human being can do that. With the super AI, we think about like time. Right, and time and space. Like, if the universe is expanding at the speed of light and has been expanding at the speed of light since literally the beginning of time for 10 billion years or whatever, I don't, I'm awful at all these physics things, mostly because my brain cannot understand it. Like, what is the universe going to look like in 100 trillion years? Right, like, I have no idea what it's going to, my brain cannot comprehend what anything will be doing in 100 trillion years, right? Like I can maybe get a good look out around 10 years. And super smart people, maybe they can look out 100 trillion years. But AI at some point is going to be better than the human brain, and it's going to be able to do these calculations that we can't even like fathom, right? Numbers that our human brain can't even store, it's now going to be able to do calculations. And I think that's really exciting for like, you know, the human people in general, but it's going to be weird because it's going to be making calculations based off of things that we as like, you know, bags of salt and water just have no concept of. And I think that's really cool, but it's also, I mean, it's reaching into like the magic category there, right? Like it's neat, but just by the nature of our, you know, human selves, we'll never be able to understand it.
Yep. And, but I think what's really important about that, so we talked about this, and what I was trying to do is build the stair steps, right? So you have whatever we were talking about, 30, 40 years ago about AI to narrow AI to generative AI to super or strong AI. IBM is calling it strong AI. I don't know what the right terms are and what it will be, but, narrow AI got us somewhere. Generative AI is taking us somewhere, and wherever strong AI, and I think that if you look in a certain Asian cultures, China and Japan, they create these little miniature robots that can do things, right? And out of that, I have an iRobot. I'm sure many little robot that runs around the house and vacuums your floor,
Oh,
now
yeah.
the one that washes and vacuums your floor. They've got all these things. We got drones. All of these things that are coming along that are able to do things that humans want to do, but we, so I remember when the first, I think it was maybe 2010, 2011 when Duke first introduced the first drones. I can't remember Mark's name. He worked at CIT at the time, and he did the first demonstrations of AI, and we were all in awe. And then we had AR, we had the Google Glass, and then what was the cardboard that who made card? I don't remember who
I
made
think it was
cardboard.
Google Cardboard. I think it was Google as well.
But all of these new things, we were all in awe of all of these. And look at where we are now. We got drones killing people, What? Where? Look at where we are. And we are, we're accustomed. No one, when somebody says drones, we all know what they're talking about now. Were we there 10, 15 years ago? That was, only tech people knew what these things were. Now everybody knows what they are. People have AR and they're playing things in their house. They're tearing down their house, playing tennis or whatever it is that they're doing. And we all know what these things are. And guess what? More innovative things are coming. And how many of us are prepared for it? Drew just said he can't comprehend. There are so many things in front of us that, we all become complacent. We all relax. We get our little robot that'll bring us a Coke, or fix food. We'll have Rosie living with us, and we will all become comfortable with but slowly it gently eases into our society and we become comfortable with it. But before long, will we be replaceable, Drew?
I mean to some degree, like absolutely. I mean, I don't think it can replace everything right now, but I mean, it might be getting to that soon. Like the drones, like when you mentioned that, it's like, oh yeah, not too long ago, drones were like the coolest thing you would ever see, and they fly around. Like it was always awesome to see them. And now, like, I see drones dropping off food in our town, drones dropping grenades on people in, Ukraine. Just recently, some American service members got killed by a drone from an Iranian militia or Iranian associated militia. Like, it's crazy. Like, they're just all over the place now.
Absolutely. And one of the things I think that we should be preparing for is to think about where this technology is going and what do we know about it. So what was really interesting about the congressional hearings yesterday was, one, there is no legislation. Two, there's so much disagreement and disharmony in the Congress that we will never get anything done. And as such, things will come into our society and pass right by us, and we will have no control of it. Because the people that are in charge are buffoons. They cannot seem to see eye to eye, and they let things happen to us, and we're not prepared for it. What you see Britain did with cookies and with data privacy and stuff, we aren't there. We still don't have any. California put something together, but we still don't have any legislation about this. We don't have, bullying online. There's so much there, and we're not. Thank you, Drew.
No, I totally understand. And I think we're at time, but I think this is a good conversation. Folks can email us at imminentteachnology@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you, and we will talk to you all next week.